Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, had a great, great Saturday, Tip. Thank you for asking. Hope your travels went well.
Good. They were not too bad.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
God, I can never remember where I was. Yes, I was at Army this past weekend, so that was really cool to be up there. I had another CIC game. If you don't know, that's a Commander-in-Chief game. Army, Navy, Air Force, all competing for the Commander-in-Chief trophy at the end of the year. So that was Army's first Commander-in-Chief game. And yeah, we had a bit of breaking news to start the game quarterback-wise, so things were interesting for us over the weekend.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
You don't want to talk about that?
No, I don't want to talk about that.
That's going to be good and man up.
You don't want to talk about it? You sure?
I'm positive. I don't want to talk about that.
Tiff, coming up in 2 hours when we get to man up.
Because that game should be taken off the board.
No, that's not
because
true.
I picked that it under a false
the
premise.
Time.
There was no reports out that I saw.
There were well, hey, talk to the broadcast team. We didn't know either.
See?
You know, stuff went without getting into too much detail. So we had our normal meetings and things like that. But yeah, we were not made aware until a little bit before kickoff. So, but that's always makes for a fun moment TV wise. At least on my end, I don't have to deal with the graphics and everything. So shout out to our great team. But I'm trying to stake out coaches, trying to find an OC or someone to be like, hey, your starting quarterback's not going. I need something so I can rethink what I was going to start the game with. And so it ends up all coming together. But
yeah,
so sorry to you.
I protest, Dylan. I think that game should be taken off the board because there were unforeseen circumstances that altered the pick that I made. But we can kind of break it down more. You can make your ruling on the Army game if it should come off the board for me.
Oh, I mean, I have my decision right now. What's done is done.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
all right,
you.
Well,
thank you.
You and your new haircut are dead to me. Let's talk about the Falcons.
Fresh. Yeah, yeah.
How about that? Like, how about the fact that we didn't screw around? There is something I did not like about yesterday's game.
Oh, no.
And I know we'll get to it later, but it's and I think it's something that this team will learn, so we'll get to that. But you had a team that came out with their hair on fire, too, in Dallas. They came out ready to go offensively. They went right down the field in their first possession. And then to kick the field goal, you're able to get them off. Caden Ellis played his best game of the season yesterday, 13 tackles.
I thought as a duo, Landman and Ellis played their best game as a duo, maybe, that I've seen.
It's the first time all year that I've seen – and it felt like for the first time all season, Caden Ellis played free. Okay, he just played like someone unlocked him. His hair was on fire. He was going through blocks. He was just knifing through plays. I mean, the play he makes on the first drive on the screenplay, they must have ran 15 screenplays yesterday.
Yeah, well, that was their running game. That has been their running game.
Because it turns out they ran the ball well, too.
I was going to say, it wasn't so much yesterday, but it has been their running game. I think that's why they've become so efficient at it. Yeah, I agree with you, though. That was a heck of a play, knifing through past my guy, Zach Martin, which is just, it was, you know, it's been hard to watch him. I mentioned that on Friday. But, yeah, he knifed right through there, man. It's a good call.
Ellis played his best game. I'm not sure if it was Ebbe Cady's best game, but I will tell you that it's his best stat line. Because I know that people are going to say, well, that's stupid. That's the dumbest thing you could say. But I think he's made an impact, and I think Raheem thinks he's made an impact this season. But they've had moments where maybe there was a holding call that took or there was a penalty on the play that he made he made, and Rod took it off the board, but it was his best stat line for sure. He played like his hair was on fire,
you
too.
You sound like you're happy with the defense overall. Are you happy with the three sacks? And I give credit to the Falcons defense who have struggled in that aspect. We've talked about it here on the show. It's been talked about nationally. It's a lot of what they talked about during the game, actually. But they were able to rack up three alone in this one.
Yeah, Grady Jarrett played with his hair on fire, too.
Who, unfortunately, had to leave the game with an Achilles strain, just precautionary. But according to Troy McElhaney of the Falcons website, falcons.com, he says he felt good. So it's
I think it's one of those things you don't want to push.
You don't want to push it. But continue your thought.
You don't want to push it. I saw Grady after the game. I think he's fine. I think he'll play probably Sunday. If he doesn't, I wouldn't expect to be more than one game. I know it's an area where you don't want to lose anybody up front, especially a guy like Grady. Grady Jarrett was this. I mean, he came out unreal to start. And he probably could have had more. I thought Dallas got away with a couple holes, including one of their touchdowns. They got away with a hold on Ebikadi. Ebikadi gave them all they could handle. Tyler Guyton was.
Buddy, I felt bad for him yesterday.
And let me look.
Man.
I don't want to go too far in the weeds to start off because I know we wouldn't need to get to the offense and what Kirk and Bijan and company did. But Ebikadi played 70% of your snaps yesterday. And D'Angelo Malone.
I was like, let's not bury the lead. I looked over it, I think, Goforth, either at the end of the first or early second quarter, and he had his binoculars out. You know, Goforth, he's got his binoculars out. And I look and I go, dude, is that D'Angelo Malone down there on the edge right now with Damon Harris at the three? I don't want to say shocked. Like, shocked is way too strong of a word. But when I saw D'Angelo Malone actually rushing the edge, I was like, I don't know that I've ever watched that. Like, outside of preseason. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen that, man. So,
and he made a play.
Yeah, I thought he looked explosive.
He made a great read on another screen play. and I think that was to the fullback. Hepner, I think is his name, or Lepner, or whatever it was. But made a great play. A great read on the screen that was to Lepke. I don't know where that's been. D'Angelo Malone doesn't see the field unless it's special teams, but I'm glad that we haven't traded him yet for Max Crosby in a seventh, because he's out there balling. I gotta take him off the board now. I don't know, man. I have to take him off the board.
Yeah, for D'Angelo Malone in a seventh, I'd probably still do that.
Kirk Cousins, what, 7 touchdowns in his last 2 games?
And the red zone. They were perfect in the red zone for the 3rd consecutive game, going 3-for-3.
Which is what they needed to be, because this was the worst red zone defense in the NFL. The Cowboys were. And so you needed to be efficient in the red zone. It was something that you haven't been near as good in the red zone as it turns out. I mean, as you would think, for a team that's averaging 24 points a game, you scored another 3 points over your average. You were just a couple points shy of 30. I mean, you look at what Kirk Cousins did and how efficient he was. Darnell Mooney had another touchdown, another, 88 yards? Yeah, I know Drake had the great touchdown catch early in the game, and then he went out with the hip injury. But once again, Bijan Robinson just does what he does. 5.5 yards a touch again. 145 yards from scrimmage yesterday. He's been phenomenal. This season, Bijan Robinson has 935 yards from scrimmage this year. All-purpose yards, right? 5.5 yards a touch and 5 touchdowns. He is quietly having, if Derrick Henry's not on pace to almost have 2,000 yards as a rusher, people have to be talking about Bijan Robinson as being one of the best running backs in football. And he still is in that, to me.
Yeah, and we're going to see one of those other guys next week when you take on the New Orleans Saints. Alvin Kamara, massive day yesterday as well. And obviously we'll dive into that throughout the week with that matchup coming up. But I'm with you. I the Falcons post-game notes they put out, they point to the fact that Kirk Cousins has a passer rating of 144 for the 2nd consecutive week. It's the 8th time in his career. But last week when he did this, it was the first time in 7 years he was able to pull off a 144 passer rating. And you're like, oh, that's crazy. Like, he did that for the 7th time in his career. Does it again. Just the efficiency that he is working with right now. Not only that, but can we talk about his relationship with Darnell Mooney for a second? A couple of huge 4th down plays to Darnell Mooney. Both of those throws on 4th down, he threw the ball before Darnell was looking, right? You got the rub route, obviously the touchdown in the fourth, and then like a 10-yard out that he throws before Darnell comes out of his break, which was just excellent. So he's operating at a high level right now. The protection, Bo, the protection was very, very good. Obviously yesterday, so hats off to those guys up front as well.
Yeah, they gave up three sacks yesterday, the Falcons offensive line did, but I don't think that three of those sacks, all of those sacks were on it. In fact, I think it was the second sack that they gave up was a coverage sack. Was literally, if Dak is your quarterback, cross the yard, you probably get a 10-yard run out of it because it was Kirk was moving, trying to find. And what had happened was, is Jake Matthews, and Mike, you tell me if I'm wrong, but from what I saw, Jake Matthews did everything. He did his job. Did everything he was supposed to do to a T. And when you push edge rushers out of plays and your quarterback kind of sits in the pocket and slowly climbs in it, you give that guy a chance to get back into play, and that's kind of what happened. And then another one was Kyle Pitts. I think it's going to be a lot like when Vita Vea got a sack and Bijan Robinson was the guy who was lined up. I think Rod's going to say, yeah, we don't want Carl Lawson lined up on Kyle Pitts. That's not how that's supposed to work out.
Unfortunately, that is the way it was designed, but I think if they had that one back, they'd say, that's probably not a good matchup for us. Let's move on. So I don't know, man, but yeah, I thought the line played well, and I'm glad you said not all of them were the line's fault. Matter of fact, I don't think two of the three were. So there you go.
It's kind of like you can pick your poison now when you're talking about this offense, and it kind of didn't even matter, even though you're missing your star receiver for the remainder of the game. Who stepped up? That's next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Cowboys showing pressure. Snap to Kirk. Here they come. Got to get rid of it. Live for Mooney. Caught. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Atlanta. Fourth and one is the home run ball for Darnell Mooney.
That's Wes Durham on the call. He's also along with Dave Archer and producer extraordinaire Bo Morgan as he belches on Falcons radio.
Well, I didn't belch on the air, but
know,
you outed
but
me,
I
Jeff.
Had to. It was loud
Thanks.
Enough to make me pause and distract me and
I didn't
and
know
disgust.
We were airing it. I didn't know we were airing out the laundry.
As I was calling you an extraordinaire.
Mm. Well, I mean, you know, that's
gas extraordinaire, is that?
Well, I'm that too. I mean, Whoa. I got. Hey,
you hear that?
If you want me to blow it out of the other end?
That's
I will, but I don't think that's going to work out too well for anybody in this room.
I hear the bus, and she just backed over him.
anyway, that was Darnell Mooney. That was his lone touchdown catch. But
that's an interesting play.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That's an interesting play, Tiff. He's. Remember when he signed here, and everybody goes, why are you? Well, this guy's on a two. This guy's only had one good year in his career. And I remember.
Can you slow down with the term everybody?
Hold on, everybody.
Okay, I hate when you do
everybody.
This. No.
I heard people. I heard people.
You heard like four of a million.
Twitter.
Well, okay. I heard loud voices, and they weren't just people on Twitter. They were people in the media. They were people on this radio station questioning that signing. And
who was that Georgia player? I forgot. Remind me of his name again. That talked about how everyone counted them out the whole season.
N'Kobe Dean.
Thank you, N'Kobe.
Day
and 7-5.
Then admitted that nobody.
Yeah.
was saying it.
But
you.
But no. I heard people say this about Darnell. I'll pull tape. I have to. But I remember saying, he also hasn't had the most efficient passing quarterbacks that have been throwing him the ball.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And he's a yak guy. But that play, I want to talk about that play real quick because it's fourth and one, and McCarthy runs down and calls timeout. And I think Arch pointed out in the broadcast that Zimmer didn't look like he was overly excited, the defensive coordinator, about McCarthy calling it timeout. And come out of the play. And they have a bunch look over there, Mike. Three receivers over there. And it was it kind of turned into what a pick play would be, but there was nothing you could call on that because the Cowboys ran in.
It was a natural rub.
They created the contact because Trayvon Diggs couldn't fight through the bunch look, and Darnell is just wide open. And to me, that's one of the hardest. I looked at Arch and said, I think that's one of the hardest throws for a quarterback because it's so wide open.
Right.
Only you can screw it up with your throw.
Yeah. I love the play design. Obviously, you're in that fourth and one situation, so the line of scrimmage is crowded. I think they were probably in a cover zero kind of all out look up front. I have to go back and look at who bailed kind of up front. But you get the bunch look to the right. Darnell Mooney's the slot receiver on the inside. He outside releases, runs the wheel, and both those other guys running verticals, and you get the natural rub. So I will say this too, watching from where I was at that point in the press box, I don't think that I've seen Kirk Cousins celebrate that hard all season. And I'm talking about game-winning plays, game-winning throws. He's had a couple of those this year. But when you saw what he felt about that play design, that execution, everything that went into it, he straight up goes like Tiger Woods, like Lane Kiffin, just barrel-fisting towards the sideline. He was so excited about that. So huge momentum shifter in the game. And to me, that was Raheem Morris, Zach Robinson, Kirk Cousins saying, nah, we're ready for this, man. We're ready to step up in these situations. It was beautifully executed, to say the least.
And it was after what could have been deflating for the team. He had Drake London, who had the first touchdown score for the Falcons on a pass from, obviously, Kirk Cousins. But then he goes out and leaves the game with a hip injury. But I believe, I think it was at halftime, or I'm not sure if Raheem did a first quarter interview with Fox, with Pam Oliver, but he said something about, you're missing Drake London, but that they got the guys that can step up, and clearly they didn't really seem to skip a beat after that.
Yeah, it's a good point. It was probably the halftime, because that's when he was officially ruled out from my vantage point, was at the half tiff, and they did it. Kadarrell Hodge came in and played a significant time. Kyle Pitts didn't have a huge day from what he's been having.
Sure.
He had Ray McLeod.
Yeah. But he had it. It was important. Like he did his job. Ray, to your point, Tiff, had the big touchdown catch. And Ray McLeod
his stat line was a perfect Ray McLeod stat line, in my opinion. It was like three catches for 30 or 40 yards. Huge catches, like huge momentum shifting catches. Like, I feel like that's what he's been in.
Three for 28 and a touchdown.
That's a Ray McLeod stat line, right? It's beautiful, and I'm sure he's fine with it.
And Bijan had another seven catches. The Cowboys decided on offense that they were just going to run screens. Art said it at the top of the game. His Mercedes Benz keys of the game was limit the yak for Dallas. And there's so much focus on Matthew Judon and the sacks that he has and hasn't gotten this year. And they run a screen in the third quarter, Mike, and they try to set up a screen. And they got to Jake Ferguson, and there are two Falcons on the right side of the field. Two Falcons are there. And they have this thing set up perfectly, and Judon just gets his hand in there and bats that ball and just kind of makes the throw inaccurate. And that got him off the field.
Hit his red sleeve on the ball.
That's a touchdown.
I know.
This game could have been different. So the stat lines are not always accurate when you talk about big plays.
Well, another L in the column for the Cowboys is accurate, and they lost in more ways than one, with quarterback Dak Prescott having to leave this game. He suffered a hamstring injury during it. He's supposed to undergo an MRI today, but there are also shots of his hand that appeared to be really swollen. I believe it was his right hand, his throwing hand, that appeared to be pretty significantly swollen. I think maybe some bleeding, I think, if I recall, when I was seeing the zoom in of that hand. So, and then you had CeeDee Lamb battling through what appeared to be a shoulder injury during that game, trying to stay in and do what he can to will the team to win. So,
yeah, AC joint, I believe, for CeeDee Lamb, and a number of things, obviously, with Dak. It is interesting, too, and Bo and I talked about this morning. Cooper Rush ends up with more throws than Dak Prescott, more attempts on the day than Dak Prescott actually did, which is kind of crazy, but shows you kind of, I think it's been said a number of times, 27-21 is not indicative of kind of what this game looked like, right? You're backing off, you're trying to get them to chew up clock in the fourth quarter. Cooper Rush is in, he's kind of playing in desperation mode, so they also had a fumble that bounced right back into Cooper Rush's hands that he picks up the first down on. So
his
a lot of
craziness. Didn't do him any favors. A couple drop passes for them as they tried to work their way back into the game. But CeeDee Lamb, though, still being able to pull off a touchdown catch late in the game despite dealing with that shoulder injury.
He played with it almost the entire.
Yeah.
He had to be pulled off
game.
And then fought to go back in.
He's like, I'm going to make my money. I'm going to make my money.
We saw when he went down originally, and it was in the first half, and he got up, and he could tell that he was clutching his shoulder a little bit, and then he played the entire game. He was off that most of that drive where they ended up scoring the touchdown to get it within six, and he came in late, came back in, but this game reminded me of and I know it's going the way back, but we haven't had an offense to me this good in since Matt Ryan's days, and it reminded me of a 2016 game where you scored, you got up two scores, you took care of your opportunities, but then because you're up big late in the fourth quarter, you go in a softer shell than they normally play type defense where you just want them to make short underneath catches and burn clock. And it's exactly what Dallas did. And you get and basically they went, their drive might have been like 4 or 5 minutes that they scored the touchdown. You get the onside kick. But then the game does look closer than it really is. But the reality is you were in control. I just want this team to whether it's a learned thing, it's a mentality, whatever it is, but I want this team to put others away. And it's 2 weeks in a row, you had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter.
And then you're sweating it out.
Yeah, you didn't put it away. And I'm not going to sit here and lie to anybody. I remember 2020 where you're up huge on Dallas and then you need an onside kick.
Right.
To win, and you don't get it because you watch the ball roll around on the field and you don't cover it. So when they score, they get the 2 point, and they line up for that onside kick, and now the new rule is you got to declare. I was like, my stomach was in my throat.
Same. And shout out to Kyle Pitts for stepping up into traffic. That's a physical moment that, you know, he's not going to get a ton of credit for, obviously, on the stat card. But Kyle Pitts stepping up in that moment, even crossing that 10-yard marker, and he's able to get it done.
Yeah, don't wait for it. You don't have to.
He didn't. He definitely stepped up into traffic and got that done. I do want to go back to one thing, too, and Tiff brought up Dak's hand being swollen. I was shocked after the game to not see A.J. Terrell on the injury list after that strange kind of play where he looked like he tried to punch a ball out on maybe a cross route. I don't remember who it was, but he hits his hands off the receiver's helmet and then kind of clutches his hand. And it's not even able to make the tackle. And the receiver kind of falls down after their contact. But I thought AJ, I was like, oh no. Like he definitely punched at that and hit off the helmet. Had probably, I'm sure, some swelling, but I didn't see him on the post-game injury report, which was, I was holding my breath for. That was good news.
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, you hit a bump and it was worse. You thought it was worse than it was and you came out. It's weird because when the Dak thing happened, we saw what you saw. And I looked down, and I was looking down, and they were messing with his hand. And then I get the injury update that I get from Bass, and he goes, Dak out, hamstring.
Well, they did go back and show.
Yeah,
yeah.
They
when
showed
he pulled
it.
Up.
But it was like, what? I didn't see that. I saw the throw, but you didn't see the. It looks like it almost it kind of. You say pulled up, but it looked like a pop, you know, and that's what worries me for Dak.
The hand, they were touching on his right pinky area. That's what the athletic trainer was pushing down on. So perhaps we'll have some more news on the injury front for Dak today as he undergoes the MRI, though, for the hamstring injury. When we come back here on the morning shift, we will get you the latest in college football. I know you were probably sweating it out, and a lot of Georgia fans were. You were trying to pull for that big win for your Gators. I was watching that one in flight, and I'll let you know what it was like to see one of the top rushing football teams in college football on my trip to West Point. That and more when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back. Rolling along here on the morning shift, giving you the latest now on college football headlines and recapping the weekend that was. Let's get you, though, the Week 11 AP Top 25. I'll just rattle off the top 10 here. Oregon's at 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3, Miami 4, Texas 5, Penn State 6, Tennessee at 7, Indiana at 8, and BYU at 9, Notre Dame at 10 in your top 10.
I think the most eye-opening to me that one is that Indiana seems like they're finally getting a little respect.
I wonder if I was reading the right thing.
Yeah, they honestly have deserved more respect than they've gotten. It's pretty astounding what Kurt Cignetti has been able to do up there in a short amount of time. I mean, everybody remembers the press conference saying, Google me, all I do is win. But 37-point victory over Michigan State this past weekend, and that's a team that's off to the races at 9-0. So they finally make their way inside the top 10. I think it's well overdue.
Yeah, they got their quarterback back as well after the surgery, earlier than anybody thought he'd be back. The Texas A&M loss to me, now I look at the SEC and I'm like, has anybody going to make it to this conference with one loss?
I don't think so.
And by the way, Texas A&M lost to South Carolina 44-20.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's the correct. The proper way to say it.
I mean 44-20.
We might have said it the wrong way.
It goes without.
He got drummed.
Yeah. It goes without saying.
I mean, brutal. You always hear about coaches on the hot seat, and it feels like college football is worse than it's ever been with the way money is going in the sport. Shane Beamer ain't going nowhere.
Dude.
To me,
he always seems to come up with. There's some sort of big win.
That's what you have to do with South Carolina, too.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
To me, South Carolina's sweet spot is 9-4, you know, every year. Maybe every once in a while you pop up with an 11-2 or 10-3 and just, you know.
Hit the double digits every now and then.
Because you want these big wins, these upsets, you know, win at home. Like, keep the, you know, you just got to have a good atmosphere. Good for Shane. I love Shane Beamer personally.
Yeah. I thought it was exciting to see that. Texas A&M, honestly, on the opposite side of that, we've talked about how up and down their quarterback play has been, and obviously it stayed that way through this game. They had the driver's seat in the SEC. Now we kind of have to recalibrate everything we think about coming to Atlanta. We had that conversation multiple times last week, and I don't know, man. Like, there's so many scenarios out there, I can't even see straight. I have no idea. So.
You really almost had to recalibrate after the Georgia-Florida game. I was watching this after leaving my game from my phone onto the aircraft and then watching it in flight because I couldn't believe what I was seeing at first because Florida, I believe, led it going into half, didn't they? Wasn't it like 13-something or whatever it was before?
They had a 13-6 lead, if I'm not mistaken.
So, of course, Georgia ends up winning 34-20, but Florida had them for a bit. Yeah.
It wasn't dominant in any way, shape, or form. Now, Georgia rears back, or roars back, I should say, takes a 20-13 lead, and then here came Florida. And
they made mistakes that kind of shot themselves in the foot.
I texted Bo when Lagway is getting carted off, and I'm like, dude, just makes my stomach hurt for Florida and their fans, and obviously that whole program down there, because you already have had one injury to Graham Mertz and Lagway just stepping up. You're like, man, this dude's good. And then it's like, oh, dang.
But they still had a chance.
Yeah, they definitely did.
You know,
give Billy Napier. Give the defensive coordinator credit. They have fixed a defense that was just absolutely horrific. In fact, I called it the worst Florida defense I've ever seen the first 4 weeks of the season. And now they have shut down the Tennessee offense. I mean, to me, they shut down Georgia for the most part. I think there was a pick six in that game as well. So Carson Beck struggled again, but I think Carson Beck struggles. Our teams are playing him differently. They've kind of figured what they want to do. The defense has figured out how to play this offense because it's very one-dimensional at times. And I think he plays a little bit of hero ball. You don't need to force the ball in all the time. That was not a bad performance by Florida. To me, if you're a Georgia fan, I'd be saying, why did we only beat a Florida team we should have handled by 14?
Yeah, but no, I agree with you all the way around. I think it shows how good Georgia is that they can pull away when they're not playing their best. Nate Frazier, a decent game. Offensive line showed some ups and downs, but, you know, in the end, doing enough up front to get it done. But I think it says a lot about Kirby Smart's team that, look, was it 53-3 now in your last 56? And I think all three losses to Alabama, obviously the one before that coming to Florida. But I also think, to your point, says something about Billy Napier that his teams are playing hard. His teams are playing hard, and I think that is a lot about leadership. In this day and age, when guys can just freely walk out into the transfer portal, there is a lot to be said about teams that are playing hard this time of year.
So I was up at West Point to see Army and Air Force battle it out. Army was the 21st ranked team going into this after the win, I believe, if I had the poll right there, 18th now in the AP poll. This was a game where, and Bo will have to man up when we get to that segment in an hour or so, where at the last minute we're getting information that their starting quarterback, Bryson Daly, who has powered their run game, is not going to be playing. And there was a kind of an undisclosed illness is what we were told and what they had put out. So we saw their backup quarterback, Dwayne Coleman, go in. And it wasn't the same Army offense at first. They had just 50 rushing yards at half. And this is the team that averaged well over 350 rushing yards a game. So it was quite jarring to see. But in talking with Coach Munkin at the half, he told me we need to do a better job of running the ball up the interior. That ended up being what happened later in the game, and they were able to kind of take advantage of the fact that one of the star linemen, Peyton Sedgwick for Air Force, went down with an injury and did not return. So that was really tough news for them, but they were able to take it to them behind running back Kanye Udo. So it was
What did he say again? We got to run the ball up the middle.
We got to do a better job of running the ball up the interior.
Makes me feel a certain way. That gives me the warm fuzzies right there.
That is what they did. But it was just, aside from that, quickly, just the you all talked about the pageantry and everything going up there. You had, the parachute, the guys jumping out of the planes, landing perfectly onto the field. You had the flyover and just being in there. I actually got to talk with the Secretary of the Army. So that was really cool, an in-game interview. But anyway,
it's a whole experience.
It's a whole experience. Yes,
that's really cool. I'm glad you got to do a game there.
The fall leaves.
Oh, I bet it's beautiful up there. Yeah, a buddy of mine hit me up and said, "Hey, any games you think I should take this weekend?"
No.
And I said, he said, "What do you think about the Army game?" I said, "Yeah, man." I said, "Absolutely." I said, I read all my stats, and then he goes, hips me back. He goes, "Hey, I heard their starting quarterback's out." And this was literally like 11:45. I go,
yikes.
I go, really?
Uh-oh.
I was like, yeah. Then he asked me about the Auburn game, and I said, yeah, take Vandy. If Pavia is playing, you take Vandy.
You got to.
10-point win.
You got to. I can't let this segment go by before we say something about Ohio State, their big win over Penn State.
Yes.
I think that's a huge one to point to. And we went back and forth, and we both picked this game on Friday, Tiff. And I said to myself, and Sandy kind of, we were talking out of the bullpen, and I said, I have to go with, what am I going to be more mad at Monday if I come in and I was wrong? And Penn State just never seems to get over this hump.
They don't.
They don't ever seem to get over this hump. And I go, you know what? If I were to pick Penn State and I came in Monday and I was wrong, I'd be like, dude, what were you thinking? All right, so I mentioned it. We'll do that man up coming up in just over an hour, Tiff, but went with Ohio State. They were able to get
it. Ohio State won 20-13. Army stays undefeated, by the way. They won that game 20-3 against
A crazy stat, Tiff, that James Franklin is like 1-10, I think, against Ohio State. The last time he won was 2015.
They showed some interaction between him and a fan after the game, and the fan, I couldn't hear what the fan was saying, but James Franklin asked the guy, "What's your name?" He's like, basically, we're going to say stuff. Basically, put your name on it.
Well, I agree with that.
I respect that. Kelsey, I respect that.
But also, James Franklin probably doesn't need to be barking at fans when he can't deliver.
You don't have to be disrespectful because you lose a football game. And
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
Okay.
But maybe don't jaw with fans. But you just
or maybe just don't open your mouth if you're a fan.
Or beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
Maybe beat Ohio State.
Be the head coach of Penn State if you want to run your mouth.
But your job as a head coach of Penn State is to win football games.
Well,
and when
your
you
job
lose to the same team every
team
year,
you keep your mouth shut.
You know that's. I don't agree with fans talking out of line, but. At
sounds
some
like
point,
you do.
Maybe James Franklin should coach more than he talks.
He likes to yap.
You guys need to settle
sounds
it.
He likes to yap unless there's a real important question asked.
With Morgan & Morgan. This hour is brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. When we come back, we'll get you back to your Falcons and that win over the Cowboys next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.